Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, the weekly mortgage market update, providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin'.
Good to have you with us, everybody. Appreciate you tuning in this week. Happy July 1st. And then, with the 4th of July, the week coming up here, for the holiday coming up here just around the corner, we'll look really excited to be having some time to take a break and celebrate our freedoms. And there's so many things that we should be so grateful for about our freedoms, and sure don't take them for granted. So much going on in the news, so much going on across the country, both as relates to the industry, but also look what's going on at the Supreme Court, major decisions being made affecting us all. So it's good to have you with us. Appreciate you very much. We've got Pat Sherlock coming on a little bit later in the Hot Topic segment. Good to have Pat back on the broadcast. She is a successful consultant to the production, to the CEOs, the C-level management of many of the larger firms. She's having tremendous success. One of them is BB&T. We're going to hear about how that is. We're going to be talking about the disconnect that's so prevalent in the industry between management and the loan origination sales force. So we're going to be addressing that and listening to Pat's ideas on what you can do about that disconnect and what she's been doing for years to make that such a successful connection rather than having it be a disconnect. Special thank you goes out to our sponsor, United Guarantee. So glad to have them here with us and be a part of it. Say, by the way, I want to tell you all, there are a number of changes that are going on and potentially going on with FHA, as Alice is reporting. But do you know that the FHA changes are expensive for borrowers, and they're going to be some things to keep in mind as we look at this, is United Guarantee's pricing is nearly always as competitive with FHA. In fact, United Guarantee can offer faster and less complicated closings because the company reduces the need for FHA appraisals, and it's easier for the seller to meet the inspection requirements. So United Guarantee has got some exciting things. Also, they offer more premium payment choices, which is something FHA does not allow, and including single, monthly, and lender-paid options. United Guarantee offers coverage on low down payment loans for second homes and condos. So many things. So be for sure, go out and check out United Guarantee. You can go to their website at ugcorp.com or go to our website, lickinonlending.com, Lickin' on Lending, our radio broadcast website. Click on their ad in the upper right-hand corner, and you'll be directed right out to their website. Encourage you to do so. It's encouraging to see how the options that United Guarantee is creating for their customers. So a special thank you goes out to United Guarantee for being a sponsor of our radio broadcast. Let's get over to Joe Farr. Boy, talk about sitting in the hot seat, Joe. You are there, and there's so much jumping on and going on in the markets recently. So great time to have an outstanding service, and we're thrilled to have you be a part of this broadcast each and every week. What's going on in the markets, Joe?
Well, thank you, Dave. Today, we're up. We're up about 6:32 on the day. But that's much higher than where we started the morning. We were down 8 for some bit of the early part of the morning, and we have seen a number of people issue favorable price changes. So prices have moved in the right direction today. The economic information that came out this morning had to do with the ISM index and construction spending. Both were very close to consensus. There was a little weakness in the employment component of the ISM report, but really most of the improvement in price had happened prior to those events coming out. And you know, the Dow's up 150, and most of this movement I think has to do with just repositioning following the close of the quarter last week. And so last week, Dave, bit volatile, as was the week before that.
Understatement.
the most of the data that came out last week was generally better than expected. Durable orders, consumer confidence, and consumer sentiment both beat expectations. New home sales, pending home sales beat. Personal income was up. Jobless claims were down. About the only thing that wasn't favorable had to do with the first quarter and in the revision to GDP, which was a big deal. But, you know, generally better than expected economic data is bad for MBS prices and mortgage rates, but not last week. Yeah. We saw a nice improvement in MBS prices. And most of that had to do with the Fed speakers. Fed governors came out following the meeting the week before, and you know, their mission was obvious. It was to let investors know they had overreacted to what was to be interpreted in Bernanke's comments on Wednesday the week before. And as a result, I think they were pretty effective. MBS prices improved by about a point last week, and that's following a three-point drop in the days following the Fed meeting. So we've got back about a third of what was lost. The Dow recovered some as well, gaining back about 100 of the 500 points it lost. So that third last week, and here we've got another. What do we have? We got a good recovery going on today so far. So we're making some of that big drop back.
Well, this week is we wouldn't expect much volatility, but based on the last 2 weeks. What do you think?
It's going to remain really volatile, Dave. It's a short week. There's a holiday in there. It's a week just following the quarter, and we're already seeing some of that impact the market today. But more importantly, it's the week of the jobs report. The jobs report comes out on Friday. The Treasury options pricing reflect an expectation for yields, not price, but yields,
right,
for the 10-year to move in reaction to the jobs report by 15 basis points. All right, so that's saying that either up or down, they're expecting a 15 basis point movement in yield. Now, equate that to price at about 6-1 for mortgages. So if mortgages were to move 15 basis points in yield, that'd be about a point in price. So the folks that enter into Treasury options are smarter than I am, and they're saying it's going to be volatile, so I'm going to agree with them. It's going to be volatile on Friday. And even before Friday, we have the ADP jobs report that could, you know, change some perception of what to expect on Friday, as well as ISM services. And then the ECB's not taking our 4th of July off. They're going to have a meeting on Thursday, wow, which always can have an influence on the market. So coming to work on Friday, you got the jobs report and whatever the ECB does. So just expect a good deal of volatility and prepare accordingly.
I just got for those our listeners that may not be familiar with what ECB stands for, you run that to us.
It's the European Central Bank.
That's what I want. Yeah, it's our Fed basically. So it'll be real interesting. Yeah, it's not surprising they're not celebrating our 4th. You'd think they want to. As much money as we've spent overseas. The whole world should be celebrating our 4th of July. Hope we stay alive and as healthy as a country, because we've certainly financially helped a lot of countries around the world, and and our 4th of July should be everybody's. But maybe that's just because I'm a proud flag-waving American here, Joe.
Thanks
so much. It's great. So it's
sure
good to have you here each and every week, and I hope you have a great 4th of July. You're going to be doing some extra barbecuing. You know, everyone barbecues on the 4th of July, don't they, in Texas?
Oh, yeah, but it's still pretty hot, so we may be just chilling at the pool.
Yeah, I know it. And I was thinking about that. You know, like they were actually, I saw one place on the news where they said they were they're baking cookies in the back window of their car to test if it was, it was hot enough to do it. And they actually succeeded in baking the cookies. So it kind of tells you how hot it is. We had one of the hottest weekends I've been remember in a long, long time. But I'm glad you're here. You survived it. The markets are hot. Texas, Central Texas is hot. And so is the MBS quote line service, folks. It is probably one of the best products, especially in these volatile times. And I want you to stay tuned so you can listen how you can sign up and get this valuable service. Be right back after this brief break.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility over the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market,
whether you're in the office or on the road.
See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial.
MBSQuoteline.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Good to have you with us. Man, I'm just checking all the people that dialed in with cell phones and landlines from all over the country. We've got people, I think, from every corner of the U.S. And so happy 4th of July to all of our listeners that are dialing in. And also we got thousands more that are dialing in via the Internet. Appreciate it very much. And then, of course, host many, many more than any others dial or download and listen to the broadcast. So we appreciate you being in here live with us. Normally, we'd be having Paul Mallow on here. He wrote, said, Dave, there's so much going on. I can't take the time, but he sent me over what some of the news stories he's following on and that he's following and reporting on right now. Brandon Ivy put in an article about or just submitted an article to the IMFnews.com website. By the way, if you're not signed up for this service, get it. There's so many people that you can go to this and get signed up for this blog radio, blog email that comes out to your inbox every time, each day, multiple times sometimes. It's www.imfnews.com. And Brandon wrote a story about, despite the rate spike, two agency jumbo MBS dealers deals get done. So that's an important thing. There's some great aspects about what's going on in the MBS market. And there's some recent developments, especially when we've seen who it was, Redwood Trust do most of it. So we're seeing Credit Suisse get involved. The Shell Point Partners have one of the stories there. Also significant data point, Citigroup inks a large repurchase settlement with Fannie Mae that covers 12 years. Love to know the details about that. Well, if you want to know, Paul wrote about it. It's in on the website. Go check it out. And by the way, all these stories you can check out by going directly to the website if you don't get the email sent to them already. Recent rise in rates has the market talking about MBS margin calls. Real interesting thing. I've heard about some real serious hits on hedging for those that are hedging out there. They're obviously not using MBS Quoteline. There's some real interest volatility in that. Paul writes about that, about the recent rise in rates and the impact it's having and MBS margin calls. Also, there's a servicing transfer may be harmful to Ginnie Mae. Servicing transfers may be harmful to Ginnie Mae. Article by George Brooks that's out there. Good stuff all the way through this. FHFA, IG, Steve Lenick, I think I finally pronounced that right. Slaughtering that, my apologies to Steve. Maybe departing from the State Department post. That's an update. Lots of information I could go on through. The Shark Takes or the Fed Meets Tuesday. A lot of things that we've already talked about with Joe. Fate of MSR hangs in the balance. The Mortgage Investor Corp. A lot of information here. Go check it out. I could go on and on and on. I can't wait to take the time getting ready for the broadcast. I haven't had a chance to read everything that Paul submitted and writes, but it's valuable, valuable. But also valuable is Alice Alvey, because she is out there reading all this. I don't know, Alice, how you do this, but you must have spent a lot of time at the optometrist being able to glue to your computer screen with all the dynamic changes. And so it's good to have you with us, Alice, and a happy 4th of July to you as well. What do you have for us today?
Well, you know, I'm going to dovetail off of what you were saying, Dave, with Paul's article in Inside Mortgage Finance, because that is one of the hot stories is what Paul was writing about last week, and that's the GSE reform. Now, obviously, we are not quite sure this is ever going to get anywhere with this administration, and, you know, trying to get Fannie and Freddie restructured is a very long haul, but it's like Dodd-Frank in the sense of, you know, there were there were pieces of information, nuggets that were left out there where you could start to see the direction this was going in, and so that's why I think it's important that we talk about this. So the Corker bill, if you want a summary, I can send you the link. I found it's like a page and a half of bullet notes that they put together off of Senator Corker's website that summarizes what the proposal is. And when you start looking at this, you think, wow, there are a lot of changes that they're thinking about. They're going to obviously have to set up a new director and set up a new agency that would be called the FMIC, so the Federal Mortgage Insurance Corporation, right? Because I think we're running out of acronyms that begin with the letter F. So anyway, one of the pieces in here for their authority is that every mortgage-backed security issued through FMIC will have a private investor bearing the first risk of loss and holding at least 10 cents in equity for every dollar of risk. So really kind of a 10% capital share. Then they've also talked about that, you know, not all loans would have to obviously go through this, only the ones that want this government guarantee. And one of the things that Joe pointed out in our pre-call was in here is the idea that second lien lenders would be required to obtain approval of the first lien holder if a credit transaction increases the borrower's CLTV to over 80. And, you know, we were talking a little bit before the show that, well, that has a huge impact on, you know, does that mean every refi is a cash-out refi? And you think of credit unions and community banks and how many companies actually live in that HELOC second lien market. So,
huge.
You know, we don't have all the details, but this is, you know, kind of where they're starting the conversation. That's what you need to think about is, as the conversation gets started, decision makers in this industry need to make sure that they're a part of it. The other point that I think is important, two other points, that they absolutely will be looking at a gradual reduction of how high Fannie and Freddie or this FMIC would be able to lend, right? So loan amounts are going to gradually come down. Basically what Corker said is, you know, we're going to stop lending to millionaires. So, okay. And then we get the other part of eliminating affordable housing goals. Well, you know, there was a good balance of where that helped to ensure that Fannie and Freddie were serving some lower income markets. So they're right now saying that was a failed process. We need to completely throw that out. So I think there are going to be people on every side of the aisle and all different activists within the industry who are going to take a look at this and have problems with it, but at least we have a place to get started with the discussion. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, has the MBA weighed in at all, preliminary, or we heard anything from them on anything that's being discussed at this point?
Well, I think they're absolutely a part of the discussions right now, and I don't know if you remember or not, and I apologize, I don't have the date right off the top of my head, but it was a couple of years ago that they actually produced an outline of how they looked at GSE reforms, and we've talked about that. You might remember the MCGE format that they talked about.
McGee's is, we had
right.
Jay Brinkman on talking about that. He called it the McGee's. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they do have a framework or a recommended framework, and they're absolutely in the discussions and trying to get this, you know, as this is getting worked through, yes. But I haven't heard anything specifically about this particular bill because it really is just in its infancy stages getting started. So that's what we know so far, at least what I pick out that jumps out at me that, you know, will be impacting, I think, our listeners that you'll want to make sure you're paying attention to. The other thing on the watch list, as you mentioned, I think, or Joe was mentioning about FHAs and the high-priced mortgage loan impact, this is something everybody's got to pay attention to.
Right.
This is really going to be a problem when if we have too many conservative investors and too many conservative companies out there that say, I don't want to do HPML loans, and now a lion's share of FHA loans are falling into this HPML category. I was at one of my customers not too long ago, and they said, nope, we're not doing any HPML loans. I said, well, then are you going to stop doing FHA? And they kind of looked at each other and went, well, why? What's happening? And really, it was like the compliance department hadn't been aware yet of what was going on in the origination and marketing side with this product. And I think folks have got to start to sit down and say, my compliance is ruining my production to a point, right? I'm not here to throw out all regulation, right? You got to remember who you're talking to here. But there is a point where I am starting to see that from a legal side, it becomes so lawsuit fearful that it's shutting down doors in business, and it's really causing some problems, and it's not you know, it's total fear of a lawsuit and not really understanding the regulations. So there's nothing wrong with an HPML loan, especially when it's an FHA. So, well,
right.
You know, those of you who are having challenges, give me a call. We're happy to help you learn some more about that.
And you have new address, same phone numbers, though, but a new address that you're in the process of. Has the move taken place?
Well, we're actually, right now I'm sitting in my office full of boxes because we did,
we're
moving this week. Yeah, I'm just on my laptop, on my desk, and nothing else. So, yeah,
well,
we are moving.
I'm sitting here, my office is being remodeled today, so I'm sitting here operating in another room, but my office is being totally remodeled as we get ready for going and doing more live video as we go grow the Look at Them Lending
program.
Yeah. So it's good. I can't wait to get there to see your new digs, Alice. Appreciate
yes,
it so much.
Been,
go ahead.
The transition has gone really well. I'm very grateful to everyone at Indicom. It really has been a great move for us and great people, and we're very excited to the expanded products we'll be able to offer to everyone. So my new email is alice.alvey@indicom.net, and we are Indicom Mortgage U.
Yep. And for those that didn't know, that ad transaction closed just recently, and now Mortgage U was acquired by Indicom. Very exciting developments. And, again, I'm excited because it just adds all so many valuable resources to you, Alice, as you try to get out and talk about good timing. They're good timing. You're good timing. We're looking forward for a lot more from you in the months ahead and the years ahead, Alice. Thank you so much. Appreciate you being part of the broadcast. And be sure to greet our friends at Indicom and congratulate them on making, I think, one of the smartest moves they could have hoped to possibly make. Appreciate you being here. Folks, we're going to be right back. Again, remember, we've got Pat Sherlock coming up here after the break. And I got a couple other things we're going to fit in. But then I've got Pat Sherlock coming on. Very excited to have her talk about the disconnect. How do you address the disconnect between management and sales and loan originations and loan originations with sales? She's done it. Let's figure out what it's all about. Be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals,
providing classroom and web-based delivery,
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin.
Good to have you back with us. You know, I was thinking about, Alice, some of the things about FHA, and I was thinking about our sponsor, United Guarantee, and what's going on with MI. If the things continue to change as they are talking about with FHA, it really could be that FHA is going to put themselves at a disadvantage price. Because I'm reading over some of the notes that United Guarantee sent me, and they're talking about for most borrowers, United Guarantee can mean lower monthly costs and more buying power. Alice, I said, you know, what do you think? Is FHA, because of the insurance fund risk, really going to be in a pay place where the MI companies can come in and actually compete very nicely?
Well, they can absolutely compete when you're talking about the monthly payment, but the fact remains is people still have to come up with the down payment. So
right.
That's really the fundamental difference is for customers who have access to some cash and, you know, can get a full 5% down and have kind of a good enough credit that supports 5% down, then it works. But for a lot of your other customers who it's all they can do, you know, we have so many FHA loans when you're underwriting it, you're trying to find out where the other $250 is coming from. You know,
yeah.
Loan. You're starting to document the source of funds for $25. You know, so, I mean, your FHA loans are tough, and a lot of times they don't have a lot of cash. So that's really the market FHA will always have. But you know what, too? A lot of companies say, I still got to have the sign on the door. I still got to make it known to the realtors and everybody out there that I at least offer FHA, get the customer in the door, and then absolutely they should look at PMI and make sure customers are aware of that. If they can come up with a gift, the payment then is the better option at PMI.
That's definitely it. United Guarantee, folks, is someone that I encourage you to get out and take a look at it, www.ugcorp.com. time for the United Guarantee Corp.com. Check them out. Appreciate it. So good to have our old friend with us, someone that is well-published in the industry, well-understood. By the way, I should have said, Tony Garitano is enjoying his holiday. He won't be with us this week or next. Andy Schell is airborne right now, so the Prophet Doctor is up in the air. Just, I mean, literally, not figuratively, just literally up in the air, and he'll be landing, and he's sorry that he had to miss. He wanted to say both to both of you, as did Paul Mallow. Happy holidays. The three of them want to wish you all happy holidays. So let's get over to Pat Sherlock. Good to have her with us. Pat, are you on the line?
Yes, Dave. Glad to be here.
You know, Pat, it's so good to have you here, and you're getting to know. You speak at so many industry events. MPA has you in speaking regularly, as they do Alice and myself, and it's a real honor. But you're often and really in there challenging management to look at production. And I think there's been this understood disconnect for years, decades, as long as I've been in the business, 40 years, between management, the C-level management that's out there in the, at the corporate office, and the people in the trenches, out there in the offices, working and doing the work. And this disconnect has been going on. It's amazing how it has functioned as well as it has, given the disconnect. But the reality is you're doing some things to bridge that and make it very effective. So I want to get into that discussion for our listeners. But before we do that, for those that do not know who you are, I'd like to give a brief introduction and have you tell us a little bit about your background. You've been in the industry like Alice, Jill, and I have for longer than we want to admit, but you've been around. So give us a little background, and then and then some of the things you're doing now. And you, what I think is also interesting is you have a trading background, and you started as a trader, in, I believe, in the Wall Street, and then transitioned over to doing some production consulting. So give us a little insights into your roots and then that transition and exactly what you're doing now.
Thanks, Dave. I mean, I've been in the business similar to both of you folks and for a long time, and started out actually in the operational side before moving to the capital markets. But back in the mid-90s, because I ran sales and was actually head of national sales for one of the national lenders at the time, was always interested in this issue about, you know, what worked in the sales organization. So in the late 90s, my company and actually the Mortgage Bankers Association joint ventured to analyze the best practices of the top originators, and that started a long practice that is based on a research approach to what is best practices in the industry, starting at the loan officer, moving to the manager side, to the processor side. So we're involved with almost, I guess, 40% of the top, 50 mortgage companies in the business, and concentrate on sales improvement. And obviously, with what's going on, just from listening to Joe and Alice and yourself, you know, the change component is driving our business into a different mode. And historically, the issue of sales being separated from operations, being separated from capital markets, those strategies don't work anymore. And so certainly the silo effect has been, you know, historically part of how the business has operated, but obviously no longer situated that way.
It isn't situated that way, and I think that's what a lot of people are struggling with. Okay, I get it's changed, but how can we change, and how can we really connect with sales? And I like what you said, it's that for many out there, I remember they just looked at originators when I was an originator, and then later as I owned my own company, I can appreciate the disconnect. You just look at the originators, they're just a different animal. We don't know exactly how they work and how they function, but other than they all seem to be motivated by this incentive thing, but every time I speak to them, they seem to complain, so I'm just going to stay away from them and hope it works. And you're breaking that down, and so there's some things that you've done, and you're advising companies like BB&T. I mean, that you have landed at the top 50 of the top 50, you landed a good number of them. That's quite a testimony. So give us some insights, and then we're going to get Alice and Joe and Piper. Alice and Joe, jump in with any time, any minute, with some questions for Pat.
No question, this issue of how do you have a sustained success over time. Certainly a refinance market is almost a low-hanging fruit component. But as we move into this purchase money, into really a more traditional part of the business, our company is really set up and to operate in a more effective way. And the disconnect between operating separately really does start with the culture of a company. And I would tell you one of the first things that we look at is we look at what is the culture of a particular mortgage company. What's interesting about our business is that every company is actually very different and operated in a different way. And what is the value of the company is really what distinguishes one mortgage company. So you don't have to be in the top 50. You can be basically a smaller company. But every company has a cultural component to it. So the first part that I would recommend your listeners to look at is do you have a culture of shared responsibility? Certainly what we see from a consulting standpoint, that if you go into a company and we see a very quickly through different parts of the engagement, but if there's finger-pointing going on, in other words, is operations, finger-pointing, basically sales, the sales finger-pointing marketing, in other words, that component of going back and forth is really reflective of really having a lack of shared responsibility. If you're going to win in this industry in a long-term component, you really have to have in place first really is a culture of share responsibility. So, David, I would tell you have to look at the cultural side of the company and making sure that everyone understands their role and how they really do drive the success for the total business. And that really is what it's about, having the total business survive in a successful way. But everyone plays an important part. The processor plays an important part. The underwriter plays an important part. Salesperson certainly plays a very important part. So having this culture of sale responsibility really should be what the manager has to, or the executive team has to look at first. Does everyone understand their role, and is their role valued? Well, again, how do you have that in place? Well, again,
I think we all recognize the problem, but I think it's getting to the solution path
right.
That really starts getting to be problematic for many companies. And again, you've achieved that. So how do you,
right.
First of all, I think there's a realization. Would you agree that most people recognize that there is a problem, and or is some still living, no, everything's fine, and, you know.
Well, certainly
in
there
denial,
is.
Denial, I guess. That's what
yeah,
I'm laughing
certainly
about.
There are companies that are in a denial component, and they think that refis are going to last forever. I still see that today. I obviously travel quite a bit. I'm at many different companies. There still is a percentage of companies that fall into that component. And then there are the companies that recognize, well, okay, you know, we're moving into a change environment. How is my company going to survive this? And this starts with recognizing and looking at the leadership component. In other words, the leadership component, when we talk about having a culture of shared responsibility, that starts at the top. That starts with the executive team and basically those individuals and how they communicate the values of what that company is about and what are the goals of that company. I cannot tell you how many companies you go into, and typically you're underperforming sales organizations. Really, the individuals don't understand what they're being measured on. Obviously, what's happened in mortgage banking is that volume has always been the common denominator, but today volume's not going to be enough. Volume is basically just one indicator of success. It's really not the complete indicator of success. So, again, I would say you start at the leadership level, and you're having to really answer this question, is what is your compelling value proposition? I can't tell you, such a basic in any business. At the better-run companies, they know what they're bringing to the plate, and it isn't the lowest price, and it isn't the best computer system. They're bringing a much bigger idea to the marketplace, and that's basically how they handle their recruiting, how they handle their management decisions. In other words, it all ties together with what is this compelling value proposition that you're about, and that, again, starts at the leadership component. I think a lot of times the reason why sales has been put off to the side is that because of our industry's tendency to hire branches, bring in individuals, kind of hope for the best, and that has worked in a refinance market. But reality is it doesn't work long term. So you have to start with the leadership having the basic idea of what type of individual do we want to recruit. Such a basic component. You would be surprised, David, how many companies really say, well, you know, I'm just going to really rent loan officers, and they really kind of do their own thing. And then as a result of that, that's what's led the industry to certainly their difficulties that we've had over the last, you know, in the subprime crisis. And what you're talking about now is that really under a shared responsibility strategy, everybody understands their role, and it's communicated basically what is the corporate goals. When you walk into a branch and all they know are their individual goals, that tells you right away that the leadership really hasn't done a good job of explaining what we basically need to do as a business to survive and be successful. And so, again, it's the leadership side in communicating what are their goals and ensuring that those goals are understood all the way down to the admin.
Yep.
The better companies do that.
Yeah, the best company to do that. And I want to go to Alice here in just a moment, but I have one question.
Sure.
You've developed some processes, and you've actually taken an almost scientific report approach to identifying those that are the best fit. I mean, it's not a one-size-fits-all. I think you agree with that. I mean, I know you agree with that. Each company has a format or a type of loan officer will be probably have a higher probability of succeeding. Tell our listeners how you're going about that, because I think that was really fascinating. It is a bit of a scientific approach.
Right. And certainly, you know, as an industry, we have emphasized and hired and recruited people within the industry. We valued experience versus actually do they have the talent. And what we early on did back in the 90s with the Mortgage Bankers Association was to look at and analyze what were the personality traits that translated into above average success. And over the years, we've applied that to the manager level and to also other positions within the mortgage sales organization. So we would tell you that from a talent standpoint, and what I see for, you know, what are the successful, long-term, good mortgage companies doing, they will have a uniform hiring approach. So I would suggest to the listeners today that one of the things as a leader that you need to put in place is that Branch A and Branch B are hiring under the same methodology. And part of that's going to be pre-hire assessments. But the other side of it is also hiring to your culture. And that has to start at the hiring component of it. The best companies in the industry, certainly what I see from a consulting standpoint, they don't use a trial and error method with hiring. They use a systematic, structured approach that is throughout their sales organization. So, again, from a manager standpoint, they like that because it takes away this issue of some managers are good at hiring and other managers are not. If the leadership and management executive group has really focused on our hiring process is going to look that, like this throughout the organization, that's one less worry for the manager.
Yeah.
So when you move to the next side of it, so the good companies have a uniform structured approach, hiring the candidates are always going through the same process. It doesn't matter if you're in Wyoming or you're in New York, they're going through the same process. I would tell your listeners today that that's the first thing that you have to take a leadership decision on, that you're going to put that in place, because that is what determines your turnover. When you're having to replace your sales staff, when you look at our performance numbers as an industry, we're over 50, at some companies we're 100% turnover. So that means you're replacing your sales force once a year.
The cost of that is ridiculous. I mean, it's just goes over the top. Alice, I mean, you have worked at a fair number of companies, and you're traveling around and talking to all these various companies, and on a lot of it on the operations, the underwriting side, you know, compliance, I mean, a lot of host of things, but generally on the operational side. And I know you and I have talked about that disconnect that has been there before, and I love the idea of a shared responsibility. Your thoughts, and then I'm sure you have some questions for Pat.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a great concept. Welcome to the show, Pat, too, by the
way. Sure.
It is absolutely a great concept. I think, you know, I do go into shops where it is done well. And you, as you said, Pat, that comes from leadership and
right.
what is being said at the top and how is that being managed. But you go into others that are still very, very traditional where there's that constant pressure where as if sales isn't doing the job it's supposed to do. I think setting skills, having the people with the right skills, you know, the old saying, I've got the right people on the right bus and in the right seat in order
right.
to get there.
That book is good to great, yeah.
So, Pat, now talk a little bit about the, is it testing then that you have
well,
for the originators?
Sure. We have developed over the years a pre-hire assessment where basically we've analyzed by looking at production numbers the personality traits and matching to what is essentially correlated. So when we look at good producers, middle producers, and low producers, we come up with a model that is very similar to what FICO scoring does or any probability analysis. And so the idea would be is that when you're recruiting, okay, yes, I know they've worked at Wells, but can they really sell? That's the issue. And I think as an industry, we've tended to overvalue which company they were with. And the pressure on the local manager to hire people has obviously been tremendous within our industry. So instead of really looking at casting a wide net, which is looking at many different people over time before an opening, you know, most managers have an opening and they are really kind of pressed to hire. So we would say, you know, how do you know whether that person can sell? Well, a validated pre-hire assessment tells you that. And so then the next part, but your interview process isn't done. Okay, they have the skills, all right, but the next part is, do they fit to your company? And this is the cultural match. I mean, part of what we do when we teach managers how to hire and coach is that we're teaching, you know, what is your culture? And you are able to ask questions in the interview process to determine whether that person fits with your company. I think too many companies have been willing to look the other way and just hire a body hoping, you know, that that person's going to generate volume, and even though that person may not match to your culture or to where your business is at this moment, which has to be a view that each loan essentially has to stand by itself, which has not been our view as an industry. So anyway, from a hiring standpoint, the interview is your most important component. I would tell everyone out there that you need to have your managers trained in how to hire correctly. Part of that hiring process is identifying the talent characteristics, but also does that person fit to your culture and does that person fit to your business model? You can't really skip on those types of topics. You really have to ensure just because they worked at a name company does not mean that person's going to match to who you are and what your business model is or to your culture. That's just equally as important as whether the person has talent.
Yeah, because it's about process, too. I mean, I've
sure.
met folks who were at a big company and their job description was so triaged and so short, and you try and move them into an environment where now you're responsible for the entire loan application and you have to really understand why the computer does certain
right.
things, because you've lost, I think, the difference in technology is also huge on what people have to learn or what people
right.
actually know. The more automated at some places, the less I find people actually know about certain subjects.
Yeah, I would tell you for sure that in the grand scheme of things that you're talking about, 60% of success is making sure that the hiring component is done well. In the companies that are well-run and really are classed within our industry, they emphasize that. So when companies view that, well, okay, I'll go get a loan officer because I have better pricing and I have better systems, they really are not they're shortchanging themselves, because basically that does not mean that the person's going to match your culture and does not mean that that person's going to match your business model. So I would tell you your investment in the hiring component and especially teaching your first-line managers, you know, how to do it correctly and using tools that help them will change your sales results. And I got to tell you, you know, David and Allison Joe, that you can change sales results literally within, you know, 3 to 6 months if you just organize leads the hiring part of it, which leads to the next part. You have to organize the coaching and the developing part. Even though they've been in the business for a long time,
that
doesn't mean
so
that they can currently sell to what is needed in today's marketplace. Today's marketplace, the consumer is much more knowledgeable. Likewise, the real estate agent and the referral source is also more knowledgeable. So your presentation skills that worked 10 years ago are not going to work today. And so, again, the coaching side of it, what I see with the best-run companies, the U.S. banks, the BB&Ts, and so forth, and other well-run companies, is that coaching and developing follows an organized approach. Why let basically the local manager do it? And really, the local manager wants to get out there and sell. And so why tie them down with some organized trial and error method where you want to really develop the person? And so you assist them through not just training, but obviously the learning plans and organizing that component of the development side. So the two sides that I would suggest, if you want to change your results, and certainly bridges gap between sales and the executive suite is really to emphasize that we're going to hire and it's going to follow this component, and then from a developing of who we hire, that it's going to follow a systematic approach. And those two sides will make really the difference between whether you may not have the state-of-the-art systems, whether you may not have you know, the lowest price, but basically you will be successful.
You know, we're going to take a quick ad break, and then we're going to go jump over to Joe and get some questions from Joe. I'm very excited to continue this discussion. I'm really interested in the selection process and how do you develop that culture. So be thinking about some of that, and then we'll go to Joe, get some of his spots. We'll be back right back with Pat Sherlock talking about how to fix the disconnect between production and management that's oftentimes there. Be right back after this brief break.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzeltrot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzeltrot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzeltrot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzeltrot represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzeltrot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzeltrot, the single source solution for your quality control needs. And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lickin' on Lending Show.
Broadcasting from hot Austin, Texas. Thank God it's cooled off here a bit, Pat. It was unbelievable. 106 here over the holiday, over the weekend. And now going into the holiday, we're supposed to have some decent, reasonable temperatures, thank God. Joe Farr enjoyed some of that good heat over the weekend. So, yeah. Joe, jump into this discussion, and it is a hot topic for many. So, come on in.
Well, I had a long time to try to formulate this question. I'm not sure I know how to ask it. But do you see, Pat, people, managers, branch managers, who have this shared responsibility concept and bought into it, are they still able to say to the top producers out there, hey, we don't want you because you don't fit in our scheme?
Well, the short answer, Joe, to the better-run companies will do that. The other companies that what I would call look maybe the other way think that a top producer unto themselves will basically not have any type of impact on their organization. And the manager at the first-line level who really isn't willing to step to the plate on the hiring side of it would recognize that an individual may not be a match culturally for them. But I would tell you, certainly as you're describing, there are many companies and they tend to have the high turnover numbers. Anything over 50% is really, not a very good number. And so Reality is if they land a tire producer, the better run companies and recognize if that person doesn't culturally match with them and to their business model, they will pass on them. That doesn't mean, you know, that that they're being completely, you know, ridiculous. It just means that they recognize who they are and they operate in that manner. So I would tell you that, you know, if there's a tire producer and they don't match your business model or your culture, I recognize it's a hard decision, but in the long term, you're going to be better off if you're not recruiting that person.
So top producers in the new world of regulation and you know, buybacks and all that,
sure.
Have you seen that they have, or on the pre-call, you said that the characteristics of a top producer haven't changed over the last 8 to 10 years.
No, they haven't. I mean, the top producers typically, I think the stereotype, and I must say, the stereotype is, Joe, that the top producers, we actually did an integrity study looking at integrity at the loan officer level, and actually the stereotype within our industry is that the top producer has low integrity, but actually that's not what we found from a research standpoint. We found that the top producers have high integrity. It's the low performers that have low integrity. So, so this issue that all the problems are coming from the top producer, I would say that would have to be looked at individually, but as a whole, we certainly see it from the integrity standpoint that those are the individuals that essentially, you know, they have a long-term view of staying in business, and so the integrity side's there. I would also say that from a top producer standpoint, you know, they typically are the first ones that, and especially from a training perspective, and it's interesting, and this would be my last comment, I guess, for today, is that when you have limited training dollars, the top producers are the ones that you should be investing in training because they actually will implement the training and they will make the changes to stay competitive within the marketplace. So this idea that they're the ones that won't change and they won't do this and won't do that, I think that's really not correct, and certainly not we see from a statistical standpoint. The talent component, you know, has been the same over the years. But the truth of the matter is that at most organizations, you know, they really the average production is still at the 2 to 3 units per loan officer. So by every definition, we haven't been very good as an industry getting rid of the underperformers because they are the integrity problem. They are the people that really you're trying to overinvest in someone that's really not matched for originations. And as we all know, originations is certainly a tough business.
Go ahead, Joe. Do you have anything else? I got so many questions. So
no,
good.
Go ahead,
Dave. Yeah, I think one of the things I want to come back to this is, so how do you measure integrity? How can you measure? Is it something that you do through the interview process, or do you actually do this through
there's two answers to that, David. The integrity component can be measured through a pre-hire assessment that we developed that's separate from really the analysis that we do on the talent side. But likewise, in the interview process, when we teach managers how to interview, we are also teaching them questions, behavioral-based questions that you can ask the individual during the interview process, which will determine, you know, where they fit from an integrity standpoint. So it's a two-pronged answer. You can look at it from a pre-hire assessment that is specifically designed to identify integrity problems. And really, integrity problems are defined as someone that's a high risk versus low risk. And then likewise, during the interview process, part of what we teach when we're teaching managers how to hire is what type of questions to be asking, which will tell you, you know, basically a lot about how that person interviews, how that person really views, whether they should cut corners. Because really what you're talking about in mortgage banking is individuals that will cut corners, they will falsify information. So, again, there are questions you can ask that will give you a view, basically, of where that person stands on those types of issues. And that should be part of any good interviewing process, that you are asking those types of questions.
I know we've just cracked open this whole topic, and I'm looking at the clock, and we got to wrap this up here pretty quickly. Alice,
sure.
Do you have anything else that you want to get any questions that have developed as you've listened to Pat?
Well, I think, you know, when I listen to Pat and I have had so many conversations about this, you know, as we look at that, our services really align with the fact that, you know, we handle more the operations side in our training. And I what I find is, you know, what she's speaking to is you have to set the expectations for the operations staff to align properly because, you know, so many times you talk to processors and their frustration is that the LO didn't do enough work or, you know, and but the reality is they're not supposed to, right? We've got to pass
right.
it off to operations at some point.
Right.
And everybody has different skill sets. And I think it's just magic what starts to happen when you talk to the operations people about skills. Processors, are they, you know, someone who's a good processor, that's not the same skill set as an underwriter. And underwriters have to stop thinking your processor should be an underwriter, and processors have to stop thinking that loan officers are going to do all the processing before they get the file. So there's just such an alignment that has to go on from one shop to the next. But I think to Pat's point, it really does start at the beginning and at the top, right? Hire the right loan officer
and those
assessments I hear good feedback about.
I know a lot of people are going to want to get a hold of you, Pat, and really just dive into, okay, I got it. We got to have this standardized process. Where do I begin? Well, one place to begin is get Pat in to help you analyze your systems, where you're at. Pat, how's the best way for our listeners to get a hold of you?
Well, let me give you my email and give you my direct phone number, and certainly love to hear from any of your listeners. Love to chat with them about helping their organization. The email is psherlock, it's S-H-E-R-L-O-C-K, at qfsconsulting.com. The direct phone number is, let me give you the 800, it's 1-800-875-0222, or you can call my cell phone number, which is 215-527-0547, and again, love to hear from anybody.
Well, companies like BB&T and others have, key companies have brought you in, and I mean, I know this is maybe a little hard because you're a pretty humble type person, but the results have been pretty astounding. Give us a little data point real quick as we exit the interview.
Well,
some of the results.
Sure. Our customers on the key criteria of turnover, I mean, have less than 25%, and our customers from a unit production per loan officer, you know, generate 30% more than companies that essentially do not use these types of assessments and training efforts. And so we know it works, but it really is a leadership issue, and it starts at the top. And if you really do believe that a quality sales force really and a quality employee force starts with making sure we hire right and we develop, that really is the key, and that's more important than having Salesforce.com or any of the technology components. It's only one part of the solution. It all comes back to the people side.
It always comes back to the people. It's all about the people and having the right ones. Folks, I encourage you to get a hold of Pat at her contact information and that you just gave. If you have to go back and download and listen to it, or go to your, what's your website, Pat?
It's www.patsherlock.com. Pretty simple.
Very simple. I like that.
Yeah.
I can remember that one. That's good. Pat, thanks so much for taking time out. Happy 4th of July to you. Really appreciate you being with us. And
look forward to having
you back again. And if you keep tearing up information, we're going to be continuing on the topic of production, so bring us any ideas. Love to have you back anytime, Pat. Appreciate it
so much.
Sounds great.
Thanks a lot.
You bet. Thank you. Joe and Alice, I'm so excited about as we continue this discussion on loan originations. We've got Rick Ruby, who is of the core training, going to be on. It's a pre-recorded broadcast. I'm actually going to have the conversation with him. He couldn't be on because he's doing training at that time. And, again, as a little bit of a teaser to that, Rick spoke at the Mastermind conference that I attended a few weeks ago in Las Vegas, and was the highest-rated speaker again. And what is this guy? It's almost like he walks in the room and is obnoxious. I don't say that disrespectfully, but it's really shooting straight. He shoots so straight with people. So I'm really looking forward to this interview that I'll be having with him, and we'll be playing and sharing that interview next week with our listeners. So Rick Ruby will be coming on. Then we're going to be covering the following week. We're going to have social media is the focus. I mean, is social media really the thing of the future? Gosh, I meant to get to that question with Pat. I'd love to have that. And so much more to talk about. We appreciate you being here with us each and every week, tuning in and telling others about the broadcast. Again, it's one of the only broadcasts out there. It's just for mortgage professionals, by mortgage professionals, and we're here to help you. It's a free service. We're giving back to the industry, and we appreciate you tuning in and then telling others about it. Again, special thank you to United Guarantee. Remember, consider them as an alternative to the FHA programs. It's better, oftentimes, better, faster, cheaper than going through FHA. So appreciate Joe, Alice, for being here, and thank you so much. Hey, Joe, what's the market looking at as we go to the window here? Go to the door.
It's up eight, a little better at the high for the day.
All right, so we're at the high of the day, so there we go. Alice, Joe, have a great 4th of July. Same to you, all of our listeners. Appreciate you being here with us and telling others broadcast. Safe travels to Profit Doctor and everyone else. Thank you so much. Have a great 4th of July, everyone.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Elvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week and thank you for listening.